Well, it's a great pleasure to be here, and I'd like to thank the conference organisers. And is that better? So it's a great pleasure to be here to give this talk. I'd like to start with two scriptural verses, one from First Letter of Peter, and it builds on from the discussion we were just having before lunch, in fact, what I'm going to say. So you are redeemed with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect, so that's a Passover lamb. He was chosen before the creation of the world. Then in Revelation, the lamb that was slain before the creation of the world. So I think the clear meaning that the authors had when they wrote these verses was that before the world was created, or if you like, when the world was created, God had in plan, a plan of salvation. So built in to the creation of the universe, there was this plan of salvation, and God preordained that Jesus would step into history and be sacrificed for us. So the implication is, I think, quite clear that God knew that men and women would sin, and he put this salvation plan in place at the creation of the universe. So built into the origin of the universe, if the universe started in the Big Bang, then this was encapsulated in the Big Bang and its development, and clearly central to God's plan for mankind. So I'd like to suggest if we're considering the origin of the universe as Christians, then as well as considering its physical origin, this should be part of our thinking, that God's salvation plan was built in right from the start. So this is the implication, his son would enter in space and time. And so what I want to do in this talk is to ask, is there scientific evidence for this pre-planned action of God? And if so, does this itself give us pointers to God? Does it give us evidence for God? And we can ask, how did God achieve that Jesus was sacrificed as he was? And here's just something very simple to start us off. So if Jesus was going to be the Passover lamb, then Jesus needed to be born into a Jewish community. If Jesus was going to be publicly slain, then in a sense, what better time to use a word which isn't quite right than to choose a time when the Jewish community was in Roman occupation, when they practiced crucifixion. So we can just think if Jesus had died in bed or been poisoned or stabbed or pushed over a cliff, this iconic crucifixion cross would not have been the same. So I think God, this is part of his pre-planning, deliberately planned that when Jesus was going to come at a certain place, a certain time, he didn't choose England today, he didn't choose Germany some years ago, he didn't choose Italy, he didn't choose America, he chose a Jewish community in Roman occupation in Palestine in the first century AD. But can we go further than that? Can we find more details that Jesus really did plan, that God really did plan that Jesus would be killed as our Passover lamb? And so to do that, I want to start by just looking at the evidence for when Jesus died. And I should say, some of you may know, I looked at this some time ago, but it's really only in the last few weeks, it's really hit me how significant this is, I think, theologically. So let's look at, first of all, the broad time span for the crucifixion. Tacitus has said Christ had been executed when Tiberius was ruling, when Pontius Pilate was the governor of Judea. Then Matthew tells us when Christ died, Caiaphas was the high priest. And just in passing, it's wonderful to have this statement by Tacitus, not a Jew, not a Christian, a Roman historian, giving us extra biblical information that Jesus really existed and was executed. So these three rulers in their different ways were important people, and we know their dates beyond reasonable doubt. So Tiberius reigned from AD 14 to 37. Pilate was governor of Judea from AD 26. He went just into 36. He stopped being governor just before Passover. So he went just into 37. He stopped being governor just before Passover in AD 37. Caiaphas was a high priest from AD 18 to 36. So if all these three rulers in their different ways were ruling when Jesus died, we can say the crucifixion could not have been earlier than AD 26, could not have been later than AD 36. And that's something that nearly all scholars agree with. And just in passing, the Gospels agree with Tacitus. Day of the crucifixion, Friday in all four Gospels, all early Christian literature say Friday. And here's Mark, for example. Mark says it was preparation day. Just in case you don't know, he says in brackets, that is the day before the Sabbath. And then the time Jesus died, Matthew tells us it was about the ninth hour. And we know the Jews started their day at sunset in their official calendar, went from sunset to sunset, but they measured their hours of daylight from sunrise. And so we do much the same today. We have a 24-hour clock, 12-hour clock. The Jews did the same. At Passover time, sunrise in Jerusalem was about 6 a.m., so Jesus died at about 3 p.m. on a Friday in the period AD 26 to 36. When were the Passover lambs killed? Well, originally, Moses is very clear in the book of Exodus where God says to Moses, take care of them, that's the lambs, until the 14th day of the month, and that was then called the first month, later called Nisan, after the Babylonian captivity. And the first month corresponded to our March and April. So Exodus says very clearly that the Passover lambs were killed on 14 Nisan. It says at twilight. The Hebrew is between the evenings, and the probable interpretation of that is between sunset and when the first stars appeared. By the first century AD, there were so many Passover lambs to be killed, the time of slaying them was brought forward, and Josephus tells us that in the first century AD, they started being killed at 3 p.m. on Nisan 14. And then the Passover meal started after sunset that evening because the Jewish day went from sunset to sunset. The Passover meal started on Nisan 15. So this is the Last Supper description in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the Synoptic Gospels. So Mark says, the disciples asked Jesus, where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover? And then in Luke, Jesus says, I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. So in the Synoptic Gospels, the Last Supper, clearly a Passover meal, which will be on Nisan 15, with the crucifixion later that same Jewish day, still on Nisan 15, the day going from sunset to sunset. And then there's this apparent discrepancy with John's Gospel, where John, talking about the same Last Supper, that's clear, he specifies it was just before the Passover feast, the evening meal was being served. And then later John talks about the trials, where he says the Jews led Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. To avoid ceremonial uncleanness, the Jews did not enter the palace. They wanted to be able to eat the Passover. And John clearly puts the Last Supper before the Passover, and John has Jesus being killed at the same time as the Passover lambs were killed on Nisan 14. So when we look into find out the date of the crucifixion, then let's assume that, you know, we don't know which of the Gospels are correct, or maybe they're both correct. Let's assume that it could be Nisan 14 or 15. And so we have these three key clues to the date of the crucifixion. It was in the broad time period, AD 26 to 36. It was on a Friday, and it could have been Nisan 14 or 15. And so we can ask this scientific question, if you like, or calendrical question: in what years did Nisan 14 or 15 fall on a Friday in this period, AD 26 to 36? Unfortunately, we have no calendars. They haven't been preserved, no historical records. So I worked with an astronomer to reconstruct the first century AD Jewish calendar. This was some time ago. And this was with Dr. Graham Waddington, an Oxford University astrophysicist. And you can reconstruct this using astronomy because the first day of the month, it was an observational calendar, and the Muslim calendar is still observational, Jewish is now calculated. The first day of the month was when the evening, when the new moon, the small glowing crescent of the new moon was first visible, and that was the first day of the month. And symbolically, the new light for the new moon meant a new month. And the mean time between moons is about 29 and a half days, so each month is 29 or 30 days long. And previously, people have tried to do these calculations, and they haven't been that accurate, but Graham's calculations were very accurate, and we checked them against over 1,000 recorded observations of the new moon, and it gave the right answer every time. So I think we can have a lot of confidence in them. And this gives the possible dates of the crucifixion. So Friday fell on Nisan 14. In the following years, between AD 26 and 36, this is the source, is John's Gospel. And then it fell on Nisan 15 in his other dates, between AD 26 and 36, and that's the Synoptics description. And if you're awake, you will notice that 11 April AD 27 appears for both John and the Synoptics, and that's because the calculations take into account the possibility that it was a cloudy sky, and so the observation was delayed. And we did that for every year in the period AD 26 to 36, and this additional date pops out. And then you may also notice there are two AD 34 dates, And that's because the priests had wonderful powers. If the winter had been exceptionally cold, they could decree an extra month. Because the Passover lambs wouldn't have been ready. So they had the power to do this. And so we went through the calculations again, assuming they might have done this every year. And so we get an additional possibility for AD 34. So those are the six possible dates. I'll just mention, just in passing, this apparent contradiction, I think, is not a contradiction. I think that all four Gospels actually agree. And the solution is that John and the Synoptics are using a different calendar. So John is using the official calendar in which the Last Supper was before the official Passover meal. And the Synoptics are describing that Jesus chose to use an earlier Jewish calendar. In fact, I think the one instituted by Moses in Egypt, in which the Last Supper was a Passover meal. So I believe they're all correct if you take into account these different calendars which are being used by the different gospel writers. Let's just look at a few more minor clues. Luke very carefully specifies when John the Baptist started his ministry. He says it was in the 15th year of Tiberius Caesar. Unfortunately, Luke doesn't tell us the calendar he was using. So the various possibilities, AD 29 is the Roman calendar, and Luke was probably using that because of the 15th year of Tiberius Caesar, who was Roman. But the earliest possible date is autumn AD 28 to 29. That's a Jewish civil calendar. And since John the Baptist baptized Jesus, then Jesus could not have been crucified in AD 27. So that's too early for the crucifixion. So we can go to these tables and delete the AD 27 dates. And similarly, if we look at the latest possible dates for Paul's conversion, if you look at this carefully, then the latest date is AD 34. And most ancient texts believe there was something like 18 months between the crucifixion of Jesus and the conversion of St. Paul. So AD 34 is too late for the crucifixion. And so we can cross out AD 27 and AD 34. If you look at these dates, you find you cross out all the Nisan 15 dates. You're just left with the Nisan 14 dates, and in particular, AD 30 and AD 33. So we find that Jesus' chronology is correct. And it's quite hard to fault the science here. So science is really making an impact here on biblical interpretation. And John's chronology is correct. And as I just said, synoptic chronology also believes correct. If you want to know more, I've got no time here to talk about it. I do give a lot more details in a book I wrote in 2011, published by CUP. Not trying to sell books, get it from the library if you're interested. So here's another reference to when Jesus died, and this is from a Jewish source, and it's the Babylonian Talmud, and it says, on the eve of Passover, they killed Yeshu, earlier referred to as Yeshu the Nazarene, and Yeshu is the Semitic word for Jesus. And I think all biblical scholars believe this is a reference to the death of Jesus. It says hanged, that again, the word that was used for being crucified was hanged in those days. You hung from a cross. So we think of hanging from a tree, but hanged was a word there that was used for crucifixion and from hanging from a tree. Now what is remarkable is that what we've shown is that Jesus died at 3 p.m. on Nisan 14, the eve of the Passover feast. So Jesus did die on the same day, not only the same day, actually the same time as the first Passover lambs were slain. And I guess the significance of this was only reached me in the last few months, that if a person commits suicide, they can choose when they're going to die. If a person's killed by others with trials involved, very, very difficult. So this is really a remarkable coincidence, a remarkable piece of timing. It's not a coincidence, a remarkable piece of timing that Jesus died exactly when the first Passover lambs were slain. So this is totally consistent with the death of Jesus being pre-planned in detail, and it's a pointer to God having a salvation plan. Well, let's just have a look at a few more minor clues. We said the earliest date for the start of Jesus' ministry was the autumn of AD 28, and John's Gospel records three Passovers in his ministry, so AD 30 could not have been, if you accept this, AD 30 could not have been the year of the crucifixion. And then there's what's often called the temple reference in John 2:20, where the Jews are talking to Jesus at his first Passover appearance in Jerusalem. They say to him, it's taken 46 years to build this temple. The word used in the Gospel for temples is naos. It's the inner court of the temple. And if you go to Josephus, he tells us when Herod started to rebuild the inner court of the temple. And if you add on 46 years, it takes us to AD 30 or AD 31 if there was some preparation time involved. Either way, you can't have a crucifixion in AD 30. So we're just left with one unique date of the crucifixion, Friday 3rd of April, AD 33. And I first published this, although not in the sort of detail that's in a later book, in Nature. So it's rather nice to have a Nature paper. There are very few Nature papers on science and religion. This is one of them, way back in 1983. But as I said, I haven't really talked about the significance, the theological significance before. Well, let's have a look at this piece of evidence, I believe, for God from fulfilled prophecy about the crucifixion. And this is a prophecy of the prophet Joel. The date of writing Joel is uncertain, but most scholars say anywhere between the 9th to 5th century BC. And Peter quotes from this in his speech at Pentecost, which is just 7 weeks after the crucifixion. So Pentecost is 7 weeks after Passover. And you'll remember the disciples were speaking in languages that a lot of other people there could understand. And they were speaking very excitedly. They were enthusiastic about their Christian faith, so enthusiastic the crowd was saying, "You're drunk." And Peter gets up and he says, "They're not drunk. This is the third hour. You know, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. The pubs aren't open. The nightclubs aren't still going. This is what was spoken by the prophet Joel. We're living in a time when history, when prophecy was being fulfilled," says Peter. Then he says, and he quotes from Joel, "In the last days, God says, I'll pour out my spirit on all people. I will show wonders in the heavens above. The sun will be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before that great and glorious day of the Lord shall come. And everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved." So Peter's saying, what you're witnessing is recently fulfilled prophecy. Some commentators say this refers to the future, but many, like F.F. Bruce, for example, say that Peter is claiming, as indeed he is, that all the Joel prophecy has recently been fulfilled. So if you take that reading, then the last days refers to Christ's first coming. So Hebrews 1:1 says, "In these last days, God has sent his Son. Outpouring of the Spirit is Pentecost. The great and glorious day is a resurrection, since which time anyone who calls on his name will be saved." Sun turned to darkness is a clear reference to the 3 hours of darkness of the crucifixion, which the people, his listeners, would have appreciated and understood. And the moon turned to blood would have been that same evening before that great and glorious day, the resurrection. So what does the moon turn to blood mean? Well, we have two other references to this in early literature. This is from the Apocrypha, a book called The Report of Pilate. Jesus was delivered to him by Herod, Archelaus, and all the people. At his crucifixion, the sun was darkened. People lighted lamps from the sixth hour till evening. The moon appeared like blood. Many people believe this apocryphal book is a Christian forgery. It doesn't matter if it's a forgery or not. There was clearly a tradition that at the crucifixion, the moon appeared like blood. And then this is a very orthodox bishop, Patriarch of Alexandria in AD 412, talking about the crucifixion, and he says, "Something unusual occurred about the circular rotation of the moon so that it even seemed to be turned into blood." So we have three documents, Acts of the Apostles, Report of Pilate, and then this document of Cyril of Alexandria, all saying or suggesting the moon turned to blood on the evening of the crucifixion. If you're astronomers here, you'll know that the moon often turns blood red in a lunar eclipse, because the moon is geometrically in the Earth's shadow, but light is refracted through the Earth's atmosphere, and the red light is bent the most, and so you get red light going through this long... So light goes to the long path length of the Earth's atmosphere. The blue is mainly scattered out by, I think it's Tyndall scattering. The red is left, it's bent, it hits the moon, it's reflected back to us, and so it appears blood red. Very frequent, this is a picture taken from Liverpool of an eclipse moon, looking blood red. And in ancient literature, lunar eclipses were frequently referred to, the moon turned to blood. There are lots of examples, this is just two. Quintus Curtius writing, Roman historian, History of Alexandria, 2 days after Alexander crossed the Tigris, the moon was suffused with the color of blood. We know when Alexander crossed the Tigris, you can do the astronomical calculations, and indeed 2 days before the moon was eclipsed. Lunar eclipse when Bishop Felix was martyred, yet uses the same words. When he was about to be martyred, the moon was turned to blood. It's documented when he was martyred. do the calculations, lunar eclipse. So those words were used for a lunar eclipse. So you ask the question, we can ask the question, were there any lunar eclipses visible from Jerusalem in the period AD 26 to 36 at Passover time? And do the calculations. And indeed, there was one eclipse, and only one, so it's a unique solution, and that was on Friday, 3rd of April, AD 33. So it seems that this is clear confirmation. There was a lunar eclipse, I think, when Jesus died. It's interesting that the calculations require you to put in, okay, a variation in the long... If you go back in time, the Earth's rate of rotation has changed due to the tidal friction, and also due to global warming and cooling. So the ice caps have melted and shrunk, moment of inertia of the Earth changes, so its angular velocity changes. And it's only the last 40 years we've been able to do these calculations accurately enough. And this is something not in the original Nature paper, something we realized since. This is a reconstruction of the moon was eclipsed as it rose, and it rose over the Mount of Olives. So this sort of dark region is the Mount of Olives, and there's the blood red eclipse moon rising. So lots of Jewish people would have seen it because they were waiting for moonrise to eat their Passover meal. This eclipse was a normal eclipse. God did not tweak anything about the motion of the moon or the sun or the earth, indeed. Because we can retrocalculate this eclipse, if we'd had the ability, 1000 BC, we could have forward calculated it. It was a normal eclipse. And so I think it had to be built in to the origin of the universe and how the universe developed, because that's the only way you can pre-plan something like this if you're not going to distort astrophysics. Just very briefly, because I think time's running out. So this is very brief. So there was earthquakes reported at the crucifixion, and also it rolled away a stone from the tomb at the resurrection. And various commentators have said this is apocalyptic symbolism. But recently, the water level of the Dead Sea has been declining. It's been declining by over a meter a year, and it's exposing sediments on its banks, and these sediments now go back over 2,000 years. And annual layers of sediment are deposited, rather like tree rings, and you can effectively count them. And so I've got an application into Templeton Foundation to date an earthquake, which preliminary work has shown there was an earthquake around the time of the crucifixion. So you can see the laminae are normally more or less horizontal. An earthquake deforms them, and this is deformation which occurred in the period AD 26 to 36. And what we want to do is to date that more accurately. And the science will tell us if, in fact, it corresponds to a crucifixion year or not. But this is something which, if Templeton funds us, then we'll be doing this work. So this is, I think, the final slide. So Jesus died at precisely the time as the first Passover lambs were slain. The moon was turned to blood on the evening of the crucifixion, fulfilling a prophecy made about 500 years earlier, at least 500 years earlier. It was a normal eclipse, and I suggest for that to have happened must have been built in to the original origin of the universe, and makes a lot of sense. It makes more sense of the Bible saying Jesus slain before the foundation of the world, before the creation of the universe. So before the creation of the universe, I suggest God's plan of salvation was in place. The above key events were preordained. And then you can twist this around. And I think these events are, if not evidence, they're, I think, interesting pointers to the existence of God. Okay, thank you very much. Right, okay, so good question. So the Bible only has two references to the age of Jesus. One is Luke's gospel, which says Jesus was around 30 when he began his ministry. And the others are when Jewish people are talking to Jesus and they say, you are not yet 50. So there's some wide margin there. If the birth of Jesus was around, let's say, 5 BC, and his crucifixion was in AD 33, then because there's no year zero in the way get the right way around, there's a year zero in the way astronomers count, there's no year zero in the way historians count, then Jesus would have been about 37, about on his 37th birthday, or well, about 37 when he was crucified. When Luke says Jesus was about 30, the word that's used in the Greek is deliberately imprecise. It's rather interesting. Luke is very precise about when John the Baptist started his ministry. With Jesus, he said about 30. It means closer to 30 than 40 or 20. And so I think Jesus, when he started his ministry, if you said 3.5 year ministry, would have been about 33 years old when he started his ministry. So it is consistent with Luke's about 30. Right.
Have other people reacted that way that are not within the Christian faith?
Right. So, to start with, it's referenced now in a number of Christian commentaries. One very good commentary by Mayer, he questions what we've done because he says quite rightly, when we did the Nature paper, we didn't take into account a cloudy sky. And so he says, you know, there might have been a cloudy sky, they wouldn't have seen it. And so in the later work we've done, we have put in a cloudy sky. And so, and the results stay the same. Non-Christian people, when it was published in Nature, I had huge correspondence, mainly from non-Christians. I think I had, it was time of writing letters in 1983. I think I had 500 letters and I stopped counting from all over the world. So, and mostly from non-Christians. So, it did have quite an effect, I think. So, most very positive. The least positive ones were often from other Christians. So I remember one other Christian wrote, it was a church minister who said, "Cobbler, stick to thy last," which is a sort of strange English expression. But, you know, if you're a scientist, stick to your science is basically what it's saying. Yes, quite positive from non-believers. Yeah. Yeah, there's no consensus. So your key question has been what is the Star of Bethlehem, for example, and there's various interesting planetary phenomena went around that time. So there's a particular event which was in I think 2 BC, another one in 1 BC. There was a comet in 5 BC. There was a conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter, triple conjunction in 7 BC. So there's no consensus at the moment, I think.
Yeah, but this is based on the historical periods primarily, rather than the celestial.
Right. Yeah. I need to read that article then, right, thank you. Right. Yes, now, right, so that's good. So there's this remarkable 70 weeks prophecy in Daniel. I haven't looked at that in detail. It is a remarkable prophecy. I think a key question is, when Daniel refers to the anointed one, does he mean the Messiah or not? And I think, you know, biblical commentators are a bit divided on that, but it's a remarkable prophecy, I agree. And if it does refer to Jesus, it certainly gets you very close to the crucifixion time. That's the point. So Exodus says Passover, you should slaughter the lambs at twilight, and the Hebrew for that is between the evenings or between the two evenings. And so Jewish scholars have wondered what does that mean, and most people think it means between when the sun set and the first stars appear, which is a period, I think, of something like 90 minutes, something like that. But then so many lambs had to be slain that it was brought forward. So it's brought forward to 3 p.m. rather than after 6 p.m., for example. Right, so that's a good question. I mean, just a quick comment on Michael Molnar. I don't find it so compelling for one reason, and that is, I think Michael Molnar is it Jupiter and the Moon? Or it's a planet coming over the Moon. That wasn't visible from Jerusalem at the time. So the problem is that although it's a very nice scientific case, if you do work it out in detail, that particular event was not visible from Jerusalem. It was visible in other parts of the world. Sorry, and the other question was? Oh, the darkness. I think as scientists, you look for natural explanations. And as is it John Walker who wrote this wonderful book on Genesis who spoke here? I mean, people didn't distinguish natural from supernatural in biblical times. Everything was, God was involved. The darkness could have been a dust storm. And there's an apocryphal book, the Sibylline Oracles, which actually has a messianic passage. And it says at midday, the Lord brought down dust from the sky and blotted out the sun, something like that. So it could well have been a dust storm.
I think we have to move on now. Thank you very much, Colin.